man that woke up this morning on the verge of an historic 92nd win in Formula One. Records are there to be broken, said Michael Schumacher. The record is broken. Lewis Hamilton wins the Portuguese Grand Prix.
That's for all the kids out there who dream the impossible. You can do it too, man. I believe in you guys.
Start your engines and buckle up. It's the lights out. Let's go. F1 show.
Welcome to the Lights Out, Let's Go F1 show on Jax Radio. And as we are reviewing the GP in Japan, I thought we would start with a little bit of J-Rock. And that was Vic Blanca, I think, with the song Stray Cat. So, Rich, what do you think of J-Rock?
I'd never heard of the genre until we spoke. I didn't realise J-Rock or Japan rock is a thing. Yeah. And yeah, it's quite cool, isn't it? It's all right.
It's kind of jumpy, rocky.
Yeah, jumpy bit of rock pop thing going on there.
It's like a rock version of K-pop, isn't it? Really,
something I suppose like so. Yeah, it's reasonably inoffensive, but it's all
it
good.
It is. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. But yeah, that is the first bit of J-Rock on the Lights Out, Let's Go F1 show. Right,
and it could well be the last. Actually, I think potentially, given that you went through a big list of songs and went, well, this is probably the best one they've got. So.
Exactly. So we're looking at Japan then. So give me a score out of 10 for the weekend.
Oh, it's a difficult one. I mean, it's clearly nowhere near Singapore. I didn't think it was too... I'd probably say 6.
6? I'm normally the negative one. But
I know.
I'm going to go like 7, maybe even 8, I think.
What? A bit of 7 or 8?
I think it had a bit of everything. I know Max ran away with it and that was kind of...
There was a lot going on.
It had a bit of everything, I think. There was some good bits there. There was interesting inter-team battles and stuff, I think.
I didn't fall asleep, which was good, because I did wake up at like 5:30 after quite a late night. And so I did watch it live. It was good. So we were all done by 8:00 in the morning, which was great. Yeah. But there was quite a bit going on. I said 6.5 because it was a bit, but I don't know. I mean, but then again, as a track, Suzuka is a monster. It really is. So
it's a fantastic track. I mean, it's got such great history there, isn't it?
It's fantastic, and it's a quick track. And actually, do you know what? The one thing was the tire deck was ridiculous. And
that was really good strategies.
So it led to some interesting strategies, I guess, and things like that.
That's right. Yeah. I mean,
I've been a bit tight, but you know, I'll stick to my guns. I'll still say it's a 6.5.
Fair enough. It's the only figure of eight track on the calendar, which always makes it a bit interesting, a bit of a switchback track.
Yep.
The first GP was in 1987 at Suzuka, I believe, which seems late for me, because it's always been there through the Prost and Senna years in the 88 to 90. It always seemed like it was always an established track, and it's always been there.
I would say but yeah, no, it's a great circuit.
Do you know who had the most wins? Who's got the most wins at Suzuka?
Most wins at Suzuka? Ooh, don't know. I'm going to say Schumacher.
Yeah, Schumacher with 8. Most poles?
Schumacher again.
Yeah, Schumacher with 6. There you go. Yeah. Right, okay. So, a little bit of news then. So, I don't know whether this is a good or bad thing. Maybe you can tell me whether it's a good or bad thing.
Go on.
At the team principals briefing on Thursday before the race, there was one of the stewards there, one of the stewards from Singapore, and he admitted to the teams that they got their decisions wrong for the 3 infringements by Max Verstappen in Singapore.
Yes.
And is it good that they're admitting it wrong? I mean, personally, I think get it right to begin with. But also, if you're admitting it, getting it wrong, why aren't you applying something retrospectively or giving him a grid drop this week instead, if you know it's wrong?
I think that's the case, isn't it? I mean, fair play to say, you know, hands up, we got it wrong. But what are you going to do then? Because
it's always the same with Red Bull, isn't it? Oh, we got that bit wrong, or we, you know, whatever. You know, Abu Dhabi come out 6 months later. Yeah, it was human error.
Yeah,
It's
yet another sort of occurrence that doesn't really sit well. There's a bit of you that goes, well, fair play for acknowledging that you're wrong, because he did deserve some retribution from some, not retribution, he did deserve some degree of reprimand, and I don't think just a standard reprimand. I think there was
That's right. Yeah,
there were some deductive penalties that should have been applied. But then it would appear that they just chucked it all at Checo anyway, who had a disastrous weekend, which I'm sure we'll come on to. And he sucked up all the penalty points, I think.
Goodness me.
So yeah. Perhaps he's genuinely taking one for the team there. Perhaps it's a case of, oh, it's all right. Well, we're going to chuck loads at Checo, so we'll come out and say we got it wrong. I think it was a case of coming in and saying, look, we got it wrong, so please don't set a precedent. If this happens at the Grand Prix here in Suzuka,
possibly
you need to apply penalties, because what we've done is we've come out and said we were wrong. Therefore, if the same situation happens, you are almost mandated at that point to say, yes, we've got to apply penalties. Yeah, and it was also for the drivers as well. You know, if they're coming out and saying that they got it wrong, then that really does put the drivers and the teams on notice that they can't muck about with this. It's all about slowing up on outlaps in the qualifying in order to get some track position. And because what they want is they want a clear track, but they also want to be the last car on track. And it's like, well, you can't do both.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why we end up with these ridiculous situations where it looks like a blooming car park and everybody trying to get their ideal track position.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, a little bit of contract news of some of the final pieces falling into place for 2024. So AlphaTauri, so they confirmed Tsunoda and Ricciardo for 2024, and they confirmed Lawson as reserve driver and said that he will play a big part in being that reserve driver, in, you know, helping to develop the car and things, or he'd be doing sim work and all sorts. My hope was that Lawson would be loaned to Williams. By the sounds of it, Red Bull have got their plan for him, and I don't think loaning him to Williams is what is in that plan. So I think Williams is going to end up going for Felipe Drugovich. So I think they're going to have Drugovich in the Williams. It's a big shame for Lawson, but I think Lawson does have a future in F1, and that future is with 100%. Red Bull. And I think 100%. They are looking, you know, if it's 2025, you know, a year away, then that's what they're going to do. I think that's the good news there, I think.
I think so. I think he is very much... It's really, if you're Red Bull and you're wanting to incentivize your drivers, then keeping somebody like Liam Lawson, who has now proven that he can jump in a car and be competitive, puts, apart from one obvious driver, puts all three of them on notice, really, doesn't it?
That's it does.
Tsunoda, Ricciardo and Perez. Because I think what we discussed... is that if
I don't Perez, think that that lineup Perez will be through 2024.
No, I don't think so. And I think Perez might well be replaced by Ricciardo, and Ricciardo 100%. Will be replaced by Lawson, and Perez will be out.
I think so. At some point next year, Perez will be out of Red Bull. Yeah, and Ricciardo will get that jump up alongside
but
Max.
But it won't just be out of Red Bull. It'll be out of Formula One.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because I think that's where they would put Liam Lawson in to replace Ricciardo. If Ricciardo jumps up to reply, I don't think they'd switch Checo and Ricciardo around. I think they would simply say, well, we're going to give Liam a go. Checo,
correct,
you can have a reserve driver position, or you can
because there's, for the way Red Bull doing it, there's no point putting Perez then in the AlphaTauri, because that's not a benchmark for Tsunoda, because he's been underperforming anyway. It's better off promoting Ricciardo and putting Lawson in the AlphaTauri because Ricciardo's not getting any younger or whatever, you know. And
the reason you would be taking Perez out is because he has
massively underperformed.
He's been constant. He'll have been consistently replicating his Suzuka weekend.
And in fact, there was a radio message this weekend. And we'll come on to it about the race, about what they did with the penalty after retiring the car originally. But when Perez came back out, there was a radio call that I've never seen so true to my heart in what I feel should happen in this. And the radio call, it just came over and it said, Sergio, retire. And it didn't say retire the car, they just said, Sergio, retire. And I thought, yeah, definitely, it's about time.
Really?
Yeah. He's out the sport. He's been appalling.
I thought he said retire the car, in all fairness. But
First time they did. It was the second time.
I missed the second call then. Sergio, retire. I was like, possibly.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, well, I think,
to be honest, he's a good midfield driver, but he's had two chances now at a top team, McLaren and Red Bull, and he has fluffed them both.
He has, and he's had
both of them.
Well, McLaren was pretty much at his sort of, was it his, it was Formula One debut, wasn't it, really?
No, it wasn't his debut. He was in, I think he was at Force India before as well, but then he went to McLaren. It wasn't his debut. He'd already had a year or so in Formula One. Yes, it was
early,
young.
Early, it was early part of the career, wasn't it?
Fine. But yeah, but Max and Lewis took the chances as young people in a top team.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he performed very well in the midfield team, and then back at Red Bull, and he's not performing again. I think it's pressure.
I agree. I have to say, I agree. Because when he went to McLaren, his first race with McLaren, he finished ahead of JB and was third, I think, or second or third. It was, you know, good. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, who's this guy? And as soon as he's put in a good performance, I think he then feels the pressure to replicate that and 100%. Loses his head. He just loses his head. I really think that, because he can do a good performance, but then it's like, oh, how have I done that? Oh, well, now I need to replicate it. And then he gets into the next thing and he just tries too hard. He overdrives the car, doesn't really concentrate on strategy. And
Yeah, definitely. Right. Okay. So there's clearly plenty to talk about because we've got lots of cover with Perez and stuff as well. So let's go to a song that we can chomp into the qualifying.
We can chomp into it. Okay. So the last one I did was Rage Against the Machine. And Rage Against the Machine effectively disbanded after their album Renegades was released in about 2000. And they did a few years of doing stuff on their own. But then they reunited in 2007 at the Coachella Festival. Now, the festival, the Coachella Festival in San Francisco, its origins go back to a 1993 concert performed at the Empire Polo Club by our next band. And that was a concert performed by Pearl Jam. So that's how we're going to get from Rage Against the Machine to Pearl Jam. And this is their fab hit, Even Flow.
That was the brilliant Even Flow by Pearl Jam. And this is the Lightsight Let's Go F1 show on Jack's Radio. And we are doing the Japanese Grand Prix. So, Rich, should we get straight into qualifying?
Let's do the quali. Do the quali.
Let's do it. Okay. Pole position, Max Verstappen. Second place was Oscar Piastri. Stand up and take a bow. Well done.
Absolutely.
Third was Norris. Fourth was Leclerc. Fifth was Perez, 0.8 down on his teammate in pole position. Sixth was Sainz. Seventh was Hamilton. Eighth, Russell. Ninth, Tsunoda. Good lap from Tsunoda once the pressure was off there from his contract. Tenth, Alonso. So let's talk about Max Verstappen quickly then. Massive advantage over the rest of the field.
It was huge. And I've got to say, and I know he has the car advantage, and I know that we all know how it's been designed around him and all that sort of stuff, but it was a phenomenal pole lap. It was very good.
It was, but my problem with that is it's easy to do a good lap when you're not under pressure. Pressure is when the real tests come.
I just want
to see him under pressure from a teammate or another team. Doesn't matter where it comes from, where it's nip and tuck, you know, within 0.01 of a second, where you've got to go perhaps over the line on your pole lap to then get pole. That's when it becomes a fantastic lap. Not when you're 0.8 ahead of everyone else and you're pretty much driving within yourself and it makes the lap look fantastic.
I'm gonna slightly take issue with that. I don't think he was driving within himself at that point. I think he had something on the radio with GP. And he thought there was a 128 in the car and he really wanted to push it and prove, because he was really, really miffed, I suspect, still at their really lackluster for Red Bull performance in Singapore.
I get that.
And he wanted to come and stamp his authority. And I think
But you're battling yourself and you're not going over that line battling yourself, but you might go over that line battling somebody else. That's
quite possibly.
Point.
I get what you're saying, Dan. I get what you're saying, but I think to say he was driving within himself is, I think, doing him a slight disservice, because I thought that was a very...
I'm happy to give that man a complete disservice.
I know you are. People know I've taken my issues with him and the way they do it, but I think that pole lap was outstanding. I really do. And
I think it was.
I think the other thing we've got to look at is Oscar Piastri, who came in second, who has, you know, I think that was the first time he'd raced at the circuit, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah. So the McLarens actually, are coming, aren't they? The McLarens are coming.
That was the I had to pause there. The reason I paused is that Liam Lawson also did really well, but Liam Lawson has raced at Suzuka quite a bit because the guys from Australia and New Zealand aren't that far from Japan. So actually they do race. Now Liam's raced in Super GT, which is actually, I think, probably the second class of single seater behind Formula One. They are quicker than GP2 cars. They are more powerful Super GTs in Japan. So he's had good experience. Oscar Piastri, I think, did most of his younger racing in Europe. I don't think he's ever raced really at Suzuka.
No, I don't think somebody without the track knowledge, fantastic. Second place was fantastic.
Awesome. That was an awesome performance.
It was still way off Verstappen, the actual time, but that's the sort of car limit rather than Piastri's limit. He did absolutely fantastic. And Norris did very well in third, but
he did.
Both of those guys did very well.
They did phenomenally well. And I get what you say about Max, but I genuinely watched that lap back, the quali lap, and I just thought, geez, boy, that was pretty on it. That was very good. And he wanted to get a 128 in, and he thought it was in the car, so he went out and proved he could do it. You know, and there are absolutely plenty of advantages he's got.
Perhaps there was in it, and he wasn't good enough to do it. I mean, we don't know until he's under pressure from somebody else. I'm happy to give him plaudits when he's under pressure from somebody else and still beats them.
And I think we've discussed this, and I think it will have to come from somebody else in another team, because whilst he has a say and is in control, you know, that Red Bull is built around him, as Adrian Newey builds cars around the driver to start with. So whoever's in the second seat is compromised. They never take a view. And I think probably Mercedes and Ferrari also look at, and they take the input from both drivers. They take input from both drivers and try and build a car that both drivers can race with. And I know that Newey from the get-go says, you ain't going to win Grand Prix with that. You pick one driver because the driving styles are so nuanced, you have to put your eggs in one basket, and that's who you design the car around, and you just then pick a second driver who can drive around stuff. Ironically, based on that, I think the most effective teammate for Max Verstappen would be Lewis. He drives around poor cars, and cars aren't to certainly he did when he was younger.
Perez was eight tenths down, back in fifth, in a car that had a 128 in it. That is just not good enough. I know I say it a lot, it's absolutely not.
Well, this weekend I will probably shout it louder than you. I was very frustrated with him this weekend. It's not good enough, Jack.
And we come on to him in the race as well, but I mean that was appalling. But there you go. but we're talking about qualifying right now.
Well, he was fifth. I wouldn't say it was utterly appalling, but given that
that's appalling in a car that fast.
Well, this is it. It's fast. I tell you what, I did think at the weekend as well, and you sort of say, where's the difference? I think Max has got that little gene or that little something in his head missing, which is being scared. I don't think he gets really scared.
So I listened to Autosport, and they were saying that it's well known where Perez struggles is the high speed tracks, high speed corners.
Yeah, I think
Suzuka's got a lot of them. That's where he falls down massively against Max.
And I think it comes with age as well. I think if you look at Lewis, he's lost it a little bit as he's got older. He's not as on the edge, you know, brave as he used to be, and that's not a criticism, that's just getting old. I know I'm not, as you know, I had a massive gap, for example. I went skiing when I was 18 and skiing again when I was in my mid-30s, and hadn't been in between. And I remember just when I was in my mid-30s thinking, oh Christ, knees ankles, and getting really nervous.
I mean, but I think Lewis, he's not putting it on the line for third, there's no point. Do you know what I mean? No, I think if he gets back into a championship fight, I think that will come back.
I'm hoping so, because I think Fernando probably bucks that trend. But I think Fernando's another one that just has that little bit of the brain missing that tells you to be scared, and I don't think Max has that. I think that's where it is, because he's, you know, he's happy if Newey says, do you know what, the car will go around that corner at 150. And he's like, well, all right, I'll do it then. And he'll just do it. And, you know, even though his brain will be telling him, no, you're going to crash. And he goes,
yeah, 100%.
You know.
Not in the top 10, but let's talk Logan Sargeant. So he crashed again, bringing out the red flag in qualifying. Personally, I think he's now a danger to himself and others. And I personally think the FIA should step in and revoke his license with immediate effect.
Wow, that's harsh. Really?
I really do.
That bad.
He's awful, and he's crashing all the time. He's a danger to marshals. He's a danger to the viewing public. He's a danger to other drivers, and he's a danger to himself.
Well, he made a mess of that Williams, didn't he? I mean, you could see. I mean, I saw the mechanics.
And that's sending, you know, shards of carbon fiber. He could go through the catch fences, all sorts. He's doing it too often. He's doing it. I think they should take his license away straight away. He's just not good enough. He's not got a future in F1. Let him go now.
Is he contracted for next year at Williams?
No, I think that's a remaining seat
to sort out. And obviously, we know it's Albon. Albon's nailed on, and now Albon is you know, fantastic, as we know. He needs. I mean, at the end of the day, James Vowles has got to. He's got to do something down there. He has.
Yeah, 100%.
He was complimentary about Logan Sargeant last
week.
That's
where I think they'd be getting Drugovich. I think that's what they'd be getting. Drugovich.
And if does Drugovich come with some backing as well?
I believe Drugovich is Brazilian, I think. So he's probably got whatever the Brazilian oil company is that sponsors the
Drugovich. That very, very traditional Brazilian name.
Felipe.
We'll let him off then. Felipe Drugovich. He's got the first bit right.
I think his name's Felipe. We'll check in during the next song. But yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I think so. Otherwise, I'm making a right mess of this. so we had Hamilton ahead of Russell for the first time in three races.
Yeah.
He did note, actually, I saw an interview with him before the race saying the one thing he knows he needs to improve for next year, or sort of from now, is his qualifying, because his qualifying has been below par for parts of this year. I mean, I think he's still pretty much on races, qualifying. It's about equal, like whatever it is, eight each or something. But
yeah, I think it is
reasonably equal. But yeah, he's saying he needs to improve on that, which I think, yeah, probably true.
Somebody who's traditionally been an extremely good qualifier, as we know over the years, Lewis has been. Yeah, it's not been fantastic for him, I have to say. Again, I'm going to put it down to that. I think that is a slight age thing. I think. You know, because on quali day, that is when you need, you know, millimeter precision against barriers, and you really are hanging it on the ragged edge. So, you know, but he's still there or thereabouts. So let's hope he does improve over the remainder of this year and into next.
There's good luck by Tsunoda. That Alpha Tower has come on quite well, actually. And you had Lawson in 11th, another very good qualifying from Lawson.
Well, it was good by them. I think, you know, Yuki was buoyed on by the home crowd. He must have been. And they all, you know, if it was Takuma Sato.
Mansell always says that gives you a half a second, doesn't it?
It does. So Takuma Sato or Suzuki Nakajima, you know, all those guys that have raced in Formula 1 from Japan, they always performed well in the Japanese Grand Prix. So it really does give them a good boost, I think, when they're at their home race.
Yeah, definitely. And you had Alonso in 10th, and another person who I think needs to go. I don't think the FIA should strip him of his license, but he definitely needs to lose his contract. He probably hasn't even got a contract because he drives for his dad. But Stroll down in 17th and out in Q1 yet again.
That was awful.
I think he needs to go. He needs to go, definitely.
That conversation's getting long overdue now between father and son there.
It certainly is.
Definitely.
OK, we're gonna go to a quick song, then we can crack into the race. And this is a song chosen by one of the listeners, Greg. And he has said that he'd like to see played the Rolling Stones and Sympathy for the Devil.
Quality.
That was the Rolling Stones with Sympathy for the Devil. And this is the Lights Out, Let's Go F1 show on Jack's Radio. Okay, Rich, we are doing the race in Japan. So I will give you a rundown as I normally do.
Let's go for it.
So your race winner was Max Verstappen. Second place was Lando Norris. Third was Piastri. So it was a swap around for the two McLaren boys.
Yep.
Fourth was Leclerc. Fifth was Hamilton. Sixth was Sainz. Seventh was Russell. Eighth was Alonso. Ninth, Ocon. And 10th, Gasly. So fastest lap went to Max Verstappen by over a second ahead of anyone else in the race.
That was
and
nuts.
Driver of the day was Piastri, and I think that was well deserved.
It was Piastri's first podium in Formula One, was it not?
It was absolutely fantastic. And Lawson was 11th again, which is excellent, one place ahead of Tsunoda, so he did a fantastic race again.
And they had a lovely little tussle, didn't they? Fantastic.
They were not giving anybody any inches, were they? They weren't giving each other any room at all, so that was pretty good. And Sergio Perez not classified, and we will come on to that. So Max Verstappen won by 19 seconds. He said before the weekend he was going to win by 20 seconds, and it was about 19.6, I think. So
yeah,
it was pretty close. He wraps up the Constructors' Championship, so congratulations to Red Bull for wrapping up the Constructors' Championship pretty early, but pretty much by Max himself. In fact, Max has got more points than the second-place Constructors anyway, so he's basically won it on his own, which he needed to with Sergio Perez.
He has, but he hasn't, so he's not won it on his own. Well, he hasn't, because if he's got the same amount of points as the second-place team, then...
He's got more.
He's got more. Yeah, but he wouldn't have won it. If we take Checo out of the equation altogether, just on Max's points, he'd have had to have carried on racing.
True, but the end of the year, I think Max is going to win every race until the end of the year and have more than the lead.
Well, we'll come on to that.
Constructor.
I don't think he is. I think there's one more. I think there's one more bogey track, and I haven't told you this, but I'll come on to that.
But I still think, gentleman's bet, I still think he will end up with more points than the second place constructor at the end of the year.
I'm not going to take that bet because I think you're right. But to say he's won it already on his own is factually incorrect.
He has had to
have Checo providing his however many points he's provided, a couple of hundred.
Three, I think it is. Right, okay, let's... Let's come on to Sergio Perez. So, I'm not going to blame him for the start because that was, you know, four cars abreast at the start and Sainz jinked to the left. It made Perez jink also to the left and it, you know, tagged to Hamilton. There was nothing that really happened. Hamilton went onto the grass, but everything was okay. That wasn't his fault. Okay, fine. But he did pick up damage in that, Perez. So he came in and changed his front wing. But then after that, I mean...
Yeah, that first incident was nothing, and it was kind of not his fault, and we acknowledge that.
But he was slow anyway, and then...
As you say, after that, he just didn't make any real impression in what is the quickest car by a mile.
And he then had that terrible, terrible lunge on Magnussen.
That was desperation, and because he wasn't making any inroads, I mean, there's a late lunge, and then there's... so late that it was like he just made the lunge now. That was like, you know, that was so late, it was next week. It was ridiculous. There was no
it
way
was
he was...
awful, awful, terrible racecraft, to be honest. No. But here's the talking point of that, because we've bashed Perez enough anyway. So he got given a 5-second penalty for the move on Magnussen, which spanned Magnussen around.
Yeah.
And his car was damaged again, and so they retired the car. With that 5-second hanging over him. They waited about 15 laps and they discussed with the FIA and said, we can send Perez back out, serve his 5 seconds, and then retire the car again. And the FIA said, yeah, technically there's nothing against the rules doing that. So that's what they did. So they brought him out, then they brought him in for a pit stop, did the 5 seconds, he went through another lap, and then retired.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, didn't retire from the sport, but retired from the race. Now, what's your view on that?
I think Red Bull are very clever, and I think they studied the rule book, and they also discussed it with the FIA and said, we would like to do this. We think, what's your view on it? The FIA looked at their own rules and went, yep, there's nothing that says you can't do that. So they went and did it, and they can't now receive any form of reprimand for it because they cleared it with the FIA before they did it. Now,
I don't really have an issue with it, to be honest.
I think it was just playing the rules.
I think
absolutely. So what the FIA have said after that is that they may well look at that rule and go, ooh, well, hang on a minute, I think we might have to close that loophole. And this is what it's all about.
But I don't see how they can, because if they close that loophole, all you're going to do is not retire the car in the first place, do a pit stop, serve your penalty.
Yeah, but hang on. You run the risk. If your car is that damaged, you then run the risk of being ordered off the track because your car is damaged.
But that's what I then come on to say. And you're actually risking people driving cars who are in a more of a dangerous state because you've closed that loophole.
Yeah, but that's the discussion they've got to have. So, you know, it may well be that nothing happens, but they have said they're going to look at it because...
I haven't got an issue with what they did at all. I thought it was fine. I mean, you never truly retire from the race, and you can come back out and use it as a testing session. So
yeah, I mean, I thought, I'll be honest, I thought that's well, you, you don't really need to test when you're, you know, the driver that's retiring is the one who's not developing the car at all.
Yeah,
and
hasn't
had no input. So that would be a fairly wasted amount of time, and you don't want to put miles on the engine unnecessarily. But
very true. But anyway, let's come on to Russell Hamilton. I really want to talk about Russell Hamilton.
Oh, you do, yes. You know, no, this was a bit testy. This was left. Yeah, this was a testy one. This.
It was, wasn't it? So it was a good. It's good to see them being really fighty between the two. I think Lewis did push Russell off. You know, at the spoon curve, what it was early on in the race, I thought Lewis was lucky to get away from with the penalty. In fact, I'm confused why he didn't get 5 seconds because he didn't let Russell then pass, you know, back past. I'm confused why Lewis didn't get a penalty. The FIA, again, not covering themselves in glory. I think it should have been a penalty.
I think the FIA tend to look at it slightly different when it's teammate on teammate.
I don't think they should.
Rightly or no, I don't think they should either. But I think that's actually what happens. I think they go, well, you know, they're tripping over themselves here, and you know, we'll let that go. He will say that there was he understeered massively, and it wasn't he was pushing him off. But you look at it and you go, yeah, I think he probably did do a little bit of,
but anyway,
stamping your authority on the young Russell.
Yes. So then, towards the end of the race, you had the two Mercedes on different strategies. Russell made a call to try and see if he can sort of stay ahead of Lewis by doing only a one stop changing once for tyres kind of thing. It didn't work out, and he was slower towards the end. And they had signs coming up behind both the Mercedes, and Mercedes instructed Russell to let Lewis through. Russell didn't want to.
No, he didn't.
And eventually did. Do you think that was right or wrong that they made that call?
I think what was wrong was the execution. They should have ensured that Russell got let Lewis past as soon as he arrived.
I think so.
Because I think they ended up in a problematic situation whereby you've got signs coming up behind quickly, and all of a sudden it becomes much more difficult to let one car pass. Now, Russell's argument was, well, you know, I can stay ahead and Lewis can use DRS.
They weren't going to, though, were they? They weren't going to. He was too slow.
Russell was too slow. If they'd have tried that, signs would have had both of them in practically one or two corners.
Exactly.
So it was the right thing to get Lewis ahead. He was on a much different strategy, much fresher tyres. But the problem was they should have done it as soon as Lewis was on him. And
100%. I can understand Russell's, you know, protests, etc. But let's be fair, Russell, you made the call.
Yeah, I was about to say this strategy.
It failed.
Yeah.
Live with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. That's
suck it up.
Really? Yeah.
And that's the delta. That's the delta on those tyres, because we're only talking a few laps from home. It was what, three laps, I think? Three, four laps from home. By the time they crossed the line, Russell was nearly 8 seconds behind Hamilton and Sainz.
100%, 100%.
So that's how much time you lose on that on those tyres, and that's what he's got to learn.
So I think they definitely made the right decision, but it was a bit too late. They dilly-dallied a little bit, as Mercedes tend to do when it comes to
strategies. It just needs to be right. Sainz is upcoming, right, get Hamilton past him.
And also, Lewis is fighting for second in the championship. Russell's seventh.
Exactly. And also, you know, that left Lewis a couple of laps to keep Sainz behind him, which he did, but it was not comfortable. That was not an easy, you know, Sainz was charging.
And that's important for the Ferrari-Mercedes constructors fight as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it was the right thing to do. They did it a bit too late. Russell, it's nice to see him fighting and sticking up for himself, but
yeah, 100%.
Too bad, you know, too bad.
He does tend to sort of, he does get a bit emotional, doesn't he, old George, as we found out in Singapore.
But he will learn.
He's a brilliant talent, and, you know, I like having him on the in the team, but I think he was just sort of, you know, I think he believes he's way better than Lewis is. And
possibly.
He's not, he's got to wait. You wait till that car is built around Lewis, and then you'll see where it really is.
Yeah, which would be interesting to see next year, really, wouldn't it? But there you go.
And you just look at the race results and the points, and you realise that that's where Russell's got an awful lot to learn. It's about
100%.
Talk about racecraft. You say, well, what is racecraft? Well, racecraft is precisely the difference between Lewis being second in the third in the championship and fighting for second, and George Russell being seventh. They've both got the same machinery. They don't tend to develop in the same way of Red Bull, i.e. pick one driver. So you could arguably say they've got equal machinery for both their driving styles as near as they can do. And the racecraft is why Lewis is so far ahead in points. And he's got to learn from that.
Yeah, very true, very true. Okay, the McLaren boys, the second and third, fantastic double podium for McLaren. They've done exceptionally well this
what
year. And actually, I think it could be good news for Mercedes, because if they make a similar jump to 2024, where they are now, they could be challenging the Red Bulls in 2024.
They could. They fully
that
have
change
gone.
Change of philosophy and copy what basically Red Bull are doing, which is what McLaren's done. I think that could be good news.
100%.
However, so Norris and Piastri. So it was Piastri's first podium. We've already mentioned that. Will that win come this year for Norris?
Done. I think it
or
will.
Or who's going to get the win first, Piastri or Norris?
I tell you why I think it'll be Norris, and I'll tell you where he'll do it.
Go on.
New Grand Prix winner at a new Grand Prix. I think Las Vegas is going to be similar to Singapore in terms of it's a street circuit. It's in a built-up area. It's not going to have, I just think, because it's in the middle of a city, I think it's going to have some similar characteristics to Singapore, not necessarily in the layout, but just in the atmosphere and the conditions within the circuit. And I think that's going to be the one other slight bogey track for a Red Bull this year.
Okay.
Watch me be proven catastrophically wrong. But I just think that's where it's going to be, because I think that was the difference, because they're so adrift at Singapore. And I think it is down to where it's located in the middle of a city, that the wind not being around, the wind resistance not happening in the same way that it would when you've got a particularly aero-driven car. So I think that's where he's good. It needs to come, though, because Norris has now got the most points of any driver who's never won a Grand Prix.
He has, yes.
And that's not a good record for him to have.
So you think he's going to get his first win under the casino lights in Las Vegas. There you go. Right, okay, let's go to a song then, and we will see the show out. And this is your second one, Rich.
It is, and it's going to be a super link, because I know we're running out of time. Super quick link. So previous song was even played by Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam's first record label was called Monkey Wrench, and that's why we're going to go with Monkey Wrench by the Foo Fighters. There you go, it's quick.
You're listening to the Foo Fighters with Monkey Wrench on the Lightsight Let's Go F1 show on Jack's Radio. And as usual, Rich, we have fast come to the end of the show.
Again?
So, yes, we have.
It's gone so quick this week. It really has. It really has. It's good. There was a lot going on in that Japanese Grand Prix. Like you say, we didn't even talk about Logan Sargeant spinning. Who did he spin round?
Bottas.
Which
was my danger to himself and others comment came from. But anyway, let's do predictions for Qatar in 2 weeks. Go on.
Qatar.
I'm glad it's in 2 weeks because I'm going hiking for an overnight hike this weekend.
There you go. That'll be fun. That'll be good. I'm going to go Max Verstappen win.
Yeah.
In Qatar. I am going to go with a Lando Norris second place.
Lando Norris second place.
And I'm going to go with I am going to go with a Carlos Sainz third place.
Carlos Sainz third place. Okay, well, I almost had the same as you, if you'd have gone the same as this week. So I've gone for Max, Norris and Piastri. I think there's a good selection of high-speed corners at Qatar.
Same podium.
Same podium. I've gone for because I think there's some similar dynamic corners that is similar to Suzuka, and I think obviously Max will be quick there, and I think McLaren's could be really quick because the others were quite far back, you know.
And neither of us have thought Checo is going to be on the podium, which is showing
high-speed corners
exactly, and I'm going to suit him. He's going to be, you know, if he's
100%.
Up there. Well, if he finishes, he'll be fifth, sixth, seventh, something like that.
There you go. Right. Okay, that brings us to the end of the show. So thanks for listening at home. As usual, if you want to tweet us, I would love you to tweet us because I've never had a tweet.
Is that what you do now? Do you tweet them or do you X them now?
I think you X them, which is at lights underscore F1. You can email the show for song requests or anything you want, really.
Just to keep Dan company. Email him. Just email him on this. Go on.
dan.knights@jacksradio.com. If you go to jacksradio.com, you can go to listen again function, listen to any of our shows or any other show from Jack's Radio. And playing us out tonight, great song. It's going to be The Vapors with Turning Japanese. So, Rich, do you want to say goodbye?
I do. What a cracking song. I did think you were going to play this to open the show, but I'm glad you've got it for closing the show. Awesome stuff. And we will speak to you next week.
And it just reminds me to say goodbye and drive safely.